Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Is there a best time for cows to have a calf? There are a lot of variables to consider, of course, but should cow-calf producers pause and rethink some of the reasons they do what they do? That was the focus for some cattle producers who came together to discuss the pros and cons of calving periods. What are the key questions you should be asking to make the best decision for your operation? It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. If 2020 taught us one thing, it's the value of being prepared for the unexpected. As fascinating and beautiful as our planet is, it can also be unpredictable. But thanks to Pivot BioProven, thousands of farmers across the country had one less thing to worry about this year: their crop's nitrogen needs. Pivot BioProven's microbes adhere to the root of the corn plant, creating a mutually beneficial nitrogen-generating partnership that stays strong all the way through harvest. Pivot BioProven is the weather-resistant and sustainable way to achieve more predictable, more productive yields than ever before. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Pete Bauman works for the South Dakota State University Extension System. One of his key areas of work is rangeland management, and that has him in touch with plenty of cattle producers. As you'll hear in a moment, many cow-calf producers recently came together to begin a discussion about the challenges they see in their segment of the industry. They began to examine what they do and why they do it, most notably, the time they calve. Pete will emphasize the point that their work is not designed to tell you when you should be calving, but their research is helping producers ask some important questions that may influence the profitability and efficiency of their farms and ranches. Here's our conversation. Pete Bauman joins me, and Pete is up in South Dakota with the South Dakota State University Extension. Pete, why don't you begin by telling folks a little bit about where you're at? And I know your specialty is range, and especially on cattle is what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah, well, like you said, I'm up in South Dakota on the eastern side of the state, about midway to the north. You know, it's South Dakota, so it's the tropical Dakota, right? If you're not familiar with the Dakotas. So, stationed in Watertown, and I work for, like you said, SDSU Extension, a range and natural resources management field specialist. So it's a statewide appointment, but I work primarily with landowners on range and pasture and habitat planning, water systems, fence systems, etc. But the real key to, I think, our conversation today is the other part of my work, or the additional part of my work, which is my assignment to the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. And with that organization, I do a lot of my programming, and I should say our programming, collective programming between the university and the Grassland Coalition related to those grassland management and cow-related topics. Last year in February, we launched the Alternative Calving Workshop Series, which we did three stops across the state, east to west, and invited producers in to present on their own stories on when and how and why they might have changed their calving dates from that more conventional or traditional February, March, early April time period to a different time period. And what that yielded was some phenomenal collective results, I should say.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because, you know, and I'm sure that your research, of course, is with South Dakota, as you said, the tropical of the Dakotas there. But, yeah. You know, I see it even down where I'm at in Missouri. Certainly we have folks that might start calving now, which it's going to be awfully cold right now. So what are you seeing? I suppose this is a larger issue, of course, than South Dakota, but it's where you're at. Why have we moved early, and what is it that you were picking up on in those conversations that's making you have these workshops and saying, hey, maybe we need to rethink when we are calving?
Yeah, well, and let's just make sure that everyone that's listening understands that by no means do I claim to be the calving expert. You know, I grew up on a small beef operation in Minnesota, and all I remember about calving I shouldn't say all I remember, but what I remember, what sticks in your mind is this, the mud, the snow, the fact that we built a calving parlor so that we could be calving in March, pulling calves. And then, you know, the other side of me is my entire schooling, et cetera, is wildlife and fisheries management, right? So I brought these two great things together in my career. And the first and obvious question is just what you asked. Why do we calve when we calve? Every other ungulate on the planet naturally calves when nature says it's time to calve, right? So why would a cow be any different? Why would a cow be programmed any different than any other ruminant? And that's kind of a first basic biological question. And the way we approach this is that, you know, we didn't say that here's the right way to do it or the wrong way to do it, but here's the things that you have to think about. And so why is this even a topic? Well, you know, the traditional argument for that earlier calving was when folks started raising livestock and crops. You know, planting season is May, right? May and June. Could you be dealing with your herd and your livestock at that time? So the idea was that, you know, those things would be, you would move that date ahead a little bit into the earlier spring to relieve some of the labor pressure. Whether that was correct or not, we can't judge that. Obviously there was a need and they addressed that need. But then, you know, then we think, you know, these trends, obviously if that became the cultural trend and that goes on for one generation, you've got one or two generations of producers born into that system, right? That don't know any other alternative, never practice any other alternative. And so this is somewhat speculative, but, you know, it does make sense that we would have, you know, that the culture of our farming and ranching would have moved that way as a societal kind of shift, right? And then the markets followed. And so now we see on the back end of that, that October wean market is a lot of times when, you know, October, early November, that's when people have their calves ready. Well, how do you get your calves ready for that market? Well, they're born in February, March. So the system is kind of as it is, right? And so what we wanted to do is take a step back and say, well, does it make sense? You know, does it really make sense? And any one producer, this is what was so unique about this experience. As we did this project, no one producer claimed to have all the answers. They all had a consistent answer, was that moving to a more natural calving date solved many, many, many problems. But they didn't all have the same problem they were trying to solve. But the solution was the same. Move that date back, you know, May-ish, June, early June maybe. And that was like, I call it kind of the collective stone soup. You know, no one person had all the answers, but all of a sudden you get 30 of these people that have gone through similar experiences, all landing on the same solution. And then by what we did is we did these interviews and we did these kind of classroom sessions. And that's where the stone soup comes in. Everybody contributes. Pretty soon you kind of got the roadmap that this makes sense, right? Sorry, sure, that was a long answer, but it's really intriguing as to how we did get to this, you know, to this point.
Well, as you had those conversations, certainly cold, snow, mud, yeah, we know that those things happen. What other things were they beginning to hit on, and what did you find and say, if we went back to perhaps calve in right. May, June time period, what types of things do you think made more sense other than the obvious stuff? Well, the weather would be nicer,
yeah.
Which is important, certainly, but what else did you
find? Oh, I mean, it's amazing, I wish we had the hours to talk about this, but let's just, first of all, financial, economics, input costs. You know, it's not much what you make on the back end is as much as maybe what you don't spend on the front end. And so the economics of it, now there's caveats to all of this. So, you know, there's obviously the caveat of, did you take over a place? Did that place have infrastructure, et cetera? But at the very core, when you look at building infrastructure to calve early versus moving that date later so you don't need the infrastructure, key economic analysis right there. How many calves can you potentially lose by calving later if you're afraid of losing calves on pasture? Now, how many calves does that barn actually save? And could you have so many more if you went later? I'm not sure if I'm saying that the right way, but those calves, basically those calves have to pay for that barn at some point, right? So what if you don't have to build a barn? That's kind of one of the key things. And then some of those input costs, vet bills, et cetera, with the cold, the snow, the mud, all of that, of course, is a factor. And then there's extenuating costs, those associated costs, feed bills, maintaining those cows in a higher condition rate during that cold period is more expensive than maybe letting them be pulled down a little bit January, February, March, and allow them to refresh in April and May when it's easier to put, for them to gain that condition score back. So cost of feed, cost of fuel, wear and tear on equipment when it's cold. We all know how it's not fun to fix things when it's cold, right?
Right.
So those are some of the testimonies. Those are some of the things, like the input costs just go way down. The second thing is the biology of the animal. That cow is now out on green grass in that third trimester, possibly, out on pasture anyway, moving around, getting ready, getting her body ready, exercise and everything. So it's kind of that irony that when calving moved early because of labor issues, the labor issues really actually don't exist that much when they're back in May because they just handle themselves. And you'll see that kind of testimony from this group. It's like, yeah, we don't do anything with calving anymore. Might tag them or, some of them aren't even doing that anymore. They're just literally letting the cows take care of business. And it's really a hands-off approach. By design, it's just not necessary. So that's one of those things. So labor is it's kind of a flip. You need more labor calving in March and February and more crazy hours of the day as you're checking cattle and all that stuff. It's a huge leap of faith, but to a person, it's like we let the cows do their own thing and they're fine, So sure. That's kind of number two. The third thing is the marketing opportunities it actually brings or actually makes available. And I'm repeating, so trust me when I say this, I'm repeating, these aren't my words. These are the collective words of the group in that. So these are the guys that the men and women, the families that live this. And as they've moved those dates, they've realized that their opportunity to market, although shifted, there's more opportunity to hit a variety of different markets. Maybe you're marketing lighter calves later when, into December, January, when that market is really strong. Maybe you're retaining ownership of those cattle if the market, indicates that you should, and running them as yearlings back on grass. Maybe you're retaining them and selling into a later market, even in the early spring. Or up here where we've got drought planning, maybe we get a flush, maybe we get a real good flush, we've got a real wet spring, and it makes sense to retain those calves, take advantage of some of that, green flush. So just offer some options and opportunities. Planning is obviously key.
So early on, we talked about that perhaps we move the calving season earlier into the late winter because maybe people had crops that they had to plant, and so therefore it freed up labor to put in a crop. We didn't have to calve at the same time. So I'm curious, the people that you've been visiting with then, are they finding, well, we did go back to calving in this May-June timeframe, but we were still able to get in the crops because calving was just that much easier? What do you find then for those that have crops? Can they make it all balance out and work for them?
Well, I would say that the cross-section of producers that have testified or, participated in this project are definitely lean more toward your cattle producer, but a lot of them do have some ties into the farming side of things too. So I think in answer to that question, yes, those that do have crops have also found the same truths to hold true. Do we have a lot of folks, you know, that are participating that are big croppers? No, not necessarily. But the thing about it is, I think is that's where you kind of look at that biological and systematic approach to it, is that those that are saying that are saying, you know, it's fun to watch cows from the tractor because I don't have to do anything, right? and the idea here is I think we kind of have the tail wagging the dog a little bit. Like the paradigm is that I have to help my cows calve, and because I have that paradigm, I do all these things, including staying up all hours of the night, you know, hiring additional labor, hiring help, just to get that done so that I know it's done and well, so I can go do the other thing. And so the paradigm doesn't let you think critically and say, well, can I do both? Can I let the cows do their job largely by themselves, and I can go do other things? And those that do have crops have said, yeah, that works. Because why it works isn't because you as the person are doing anything different. You're just simply still acknowledging the same truth that the cows can handle it on their own. And I think that's the starting point.
We talked earlier on about the condition of cows and getting ready for to have calving. Have you been able to put a pencil to the paper as far as perhaps this cost savings, because now we've shifted that and we don't have a cow necessarily in the last trimester in the dead of winter? Do we know how much that might be saving producers when they've moved that last trimester into a warmer time period?
Now, that's a great question. And that's where this falls off the shelf just a little bit, as far as not as far as the results, but as far as those intricate details, because every ranch and farm is so unique. And every one has different challenges on their finances and how they manage their finances. We didn't really attempt to actually put a number on it, because I think the way to do that, in fairness, would do it to be an objective study by an economist that sits down with these folks and really actually, you know, teases out all of those nuances, so that you're comparing apples to apples. But what I can say is, across the board, they all know that their financial health, whether it's on a per cow basis, an annual basis, on the ranch basis, whatever, is much, they're in much better, stronger financial position, since they've moved. So I know that's not a very great answer, but to say any more than that, I would be just speculating. I don't know what the number is. You know, I'd love to be able to tell you, you know, it's 20, 30, 40%. I just don't know. But in a lot of ways, if I may, that's the first and most, that's the very, almost one of the very first questions people ask. And the way that I've heard all of these folks collectively answer it is almost to the point, well, you're kind of asking the wrong question, because it's a holistic question. It's not just one thing. It's all of everything. When they made this move, they rethought everything about how they were operating the ranch and the cattle. And we haven't even, you know, we haven't touched on like the human aspect. We know that our ranching and farming demographic is getting older. The labor involved in trying to calve and even inside in the early months is just, it's labor intensive. Stress, injury to both people and livestock. You know, we've all been there, right? It's not fun. There's fun days and then there's the not fun days. And I think collectively the not fun days outnumber the fun days this time of year. And so they, you know, the stress on the family is, I think, was an amazing outcome of this that we didn't necessarily try to highlight, but it just came out in spades every time the topic came up. And that's, you know, the marital relationships, stress between, you know, parents and kids and help, and all of that just really, really, really is dramatically reduced just simply by making this management decision change.
Was there anything in the discussions, because it sounds like that most said this was a very good move, was there anything they said, well, the one drawback is this, or did you find that across the board people said, no, it checked all the boxes, I'm really glad we did it, no drawbacks at all?
Oh, no, and that is exactly why, and I'm so glad you asked that question. You know, nobody involved in this effort would say that they have got all the answers and all the solutions and that there's a perfect answer for everyone. So, yes, there are drawbacks, and they really tackled this well. Some things like, you know, are your cows ready for this move? You know, do you have the right livestock to begin with? Things like, you know, obviously milk production with, you know, folks that have maybe moved their herd toward higher producing animals. Now you're going to get a flush of milk. All of a sudden, you know, you could, when you're calving later like that, she's on green grass, she's going to have a flush of milk. Is that calf going to be able to keep up? You know, so blown udders and all these things are addressed, but they also, when they address those as problems, they also offer, you know, how to mitigate that and the strategy. And so the very biggest take home message from all of these individuals was, plan first, plan your strategies first, plan, learn from those that have done it first before you just jump in, you know, make a game plan. If you're really considering doing this, start asking questions, making sure that your cows, you know, those cows are going to probably fall out anyway. So select them out, you know, instead of letting them determine when they fall out, call them, you know, call when you can, call when you need to, you know, make call cows an enterprise. So yes, there's definitely some challenges, but they are far outweighed by the benefits. And I think anybody would be doing themselves an injustice not to really explore what those challenges are and try to get your answers on the front end.
Right. I know your background, of course, is in range management, or that's part of what you do. Did that change mm-hmm. the way that these producers managed their grass then, because they moved this calving into the more of this May, June time period?
Oh, you ask great questions. Yes and no. What it does is allow you to manage the herd a little bit better. But of course, you know, we'll always champion the need for a sound grazing plan. The reality, like in our area, we have, you know, more or less across the Northern Plains, we've got issues with cool season exotic flushes of things like Kentucky bluegrass and smooth broom. You know, you guys might have more of the issues with fescues and things like right. that, you know, invading native pastures. But bottom line is it really, it still calls for the need for planning and good range management. But by allowing those animals to calve on pasture, it does allow some different approaches to taking advantage of that spring flush of exotic cool season grasses. But there's very much a deeper reasoning behind this. And that is, we're losing grass, you know, and that's kind of where it comes back full circle for someone like me. We're losing grass due to conversion to cropland and other things. You know, we're just not making native grasslands anymore. And so how do we combat that? And we've combated that through a variety of conservation initiatives across the country. But, you know, when we hit $5 and $6 and $7 corn, we lose grass. We lose native grass. And so part of this in the bigger picture of grassland management and rangeland management is, I want to do everything I can to support a producer to keep him or her or them successful on the range, so that we still have producers on the range. Because if we lose the producers on the range, that means we lose the cows. And once we lose the cows, we definitely lose the grass.
As you move south, of course, in the country, you may pick up more people that are doing fall calving. Did you look at fall calving up there, or was it mostly just focused on the spring calving or this late winter time period?
Well, the focus really was on the default focus really was kind of on the calving with nature, which by and large, you know, points toward May, June. But I think the bigger take home is, you know, maybe fall calving is what works for you, right? And I think the thing that they really were trying to stress as from producer to producer is, don't be afraid to take a hard look at it. Like, and you might land on calving in the fall. You might land on saying, you know what, I've got this calving barn. What do I, you know, if I move to May calving, then it feels like I'm wasting it. Okay, well, maybe you calve your own herd in May, but maybe you contract calve somebody else's herd in that facility and stack that enterprise on, you know. So they're not, no one was ever saying that thou shalt only, you know, calve in May, for instance. But take a hard look, holistic look, and match your calving and your effort to when it matches your resources the very best, right? And those resources either on the ground or maybe you would say in another way, match it to the ability to keep as many resources in your pocket as possible. But honestly, just take a hard look at what you're doing and see where the opportunity lies in your own business model to, you know, reduce input costs and potentially increase profitability while giving yourself more management flexibility.
Pete, good conversation here. Other things that you want to work in, because I know that you've written about this and talked to a lot of producers, but any pieces that we've left out in our conversation, I think it's really good topic for people to think about.
Well, I just ask folks to stay tuned. We are just about ready to release a video series on this. And what we did was we recorded somewhat like 30 producers, literally just in conversation. And we've segmented those. We've worked hard to go through all of those videos. And there's actually 25, like there's going to be like 20 some videos in this series, but they're all, you know, going to be like between 9 and maybe 15 minutes, really easily watchable. And allow people to just think about this and be guided through this process, this thought process by those that have already, you know, had to go through it. So that video series will be coming through the South Dakota Grassland Coalition. We haven't really figured out exactly how we're going to be distributing that or how it's going to be available, but trust that it will be.
Pete, I appreciate the conversation. It's been very good, and I know that there'll be a lot of folks that listen to it, and hopefully it helps them reflect a little bit just to find out what might work best for their operation.
And if folks are interested in haven't seen some of these tidbit articles, they can visit SDSU Extension. Just Google SDSU Extension's webpage, and there's a few articles on that. And we'll have links through the – they can also visit the South Dakota Grassland Coalition's webpage at sdgrass.org. And once these videos are up and going, I'm certain we'll have links at all those locales.
Very good. Again, I appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It was enjoyable. I appreciate you giving us an opportunity to explain what we're doing.
That video series should be coming soon, and it should have plenty of good material straight from the ranchers who have made some of those changes to make their cow-calf enterprise better fit their goals. Again, there's no right or wrong answer, but hopefully this conversation and their research helps people ask themselves some important questions that will make life easier and farming more profitable when it comes to calving season. And speaking of seasons, I hope you are surviving the winter season without too many difficulties. Like many of you, we are in a stretch of temperatures that are running 25 to 40 degrees below normal. So far, all of the cattle waterers are running at our farm, but just as sure as I've said that, I will most likely find one frozen tomorrow and get to work in the sub-zero temperatures trying to thaw it. But for those on the crop side who like to say we need some cold winter temperatures to better control pests, well, this should help. Hopefully, we see some more reasonable temperatures sometime soon. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.